I confess to you this morning that this is not my first time to preach from this text from Genesis 24. I do hope it goes better than the first time, though. The other time I remember preaching this text was about 10 years ago. I was a missionary, and I was giving the message during a Sunday evening service in a Southern Baptist church. Of my missionary team, I was probably the least nauseous with public speaking, so I gave the message, notice the quotes, as this partner church had requested our missionary team to lead their service. This was well before I truly thought of myself as a pastor, and definitely before I had any real encouragement or training in that direction. I vaguely remember intending to encourage that congregation to continue its above and beyond service-oriented evangelism, though mid-sermon, message, I realized that my approach was probably coming across more as berating them to continue more service and up their generosity. I think I was trying to mimic preachers that I had heard growing up. This was all quite self-serving, as this congregation financially supported our missionary team. Oops. This was not the encouraging message I had intended. I remember studying and preparing the sermon, but when it came time to actually do it, well, everyone was polite, as Southerners are, but I really fell short. I did not search very hard to find the papers of that handwritten sermon, and I kind of hope it kind of got lost in the shuffle since all these moves since then, and I hope even more that it's been forgotten by all involved that evening. It was truly a terrible sermon by an inadequately prepared person thrown into the deep end without any floaties. I don't always get things right. And I certainly don't always get things right the first time. In fact, I often don't get things right the first time. And I have this sneaking suspicion, and quite frankly, a few years of experience among you, that lead me to believe that you don't always get things right the first time either. This morning, we continue our series called Expanding Sanctuary. In January of this year, Calvary voted to become a sanctuary congregation in resistance to this new presidential regime and in solidarity with the immigrants who are part of Calvary and immigrants who are part of the larger DC metro area and the nation and even the world. And for those of us who are not immigrants ourselves, it can be overwhelming to learn about the brokenness of the American immigration system, then to feel frozen, not knowing what to do, with so much that needs doing and so many people that need advocating and just so much everything. You can't unknow what you learn, and sometimes it's unclear to do what's next. At least that's how I feel sometimes. In our passage this morning, Abraham sends a highly trusted servant with some specific instructions to find a suitable wife for his beloved son Isaac. This may or may not be the same servant from a previous passage named Eleazar, but for this morning, let's just go with it, with some scholars who believe it was Eleazar. These instructions on finding a wife for Isaac are the last recorded words of Abraham and therefore carry the weight kind of like a last will and testament. Abraham is trying to secure the future of the next generation so that they can have a bright future with opportunity and plenty. To ensure this security requires sending Eleazar to a foreign land, and that must have felt risky and difficult, yet it was essential for their future. In response to such a large and potentially overwhelming task, Eleazar gets serious about his promise to Abraham by praying for God's guidance and asking for a sign. asking for God's guidance is, I would say, a good beginning place when facing an overwhelming task. The NRSV translation calls this, in verse 45, speaking in the heart. Eleazar was speaking in his heart. Isn't that a lovely description of prayer? You can't go wrong with starting with spiritual centering. The sign that he is looking for is more than kind of a blind date situation. This is more than a red rose on a copy of Pride and Prejudice at a coffee shop. Eleazar is looking for someone with a servant's heart, who isn't afraid to get her hands dirty, or in this case, her hands wet. Rebecca was at the spring. And verse 46 says, she quickly let down her jar from her shoulder. When faced with a need in front of her, Rebecca responded, and she responded quickly and generously. When someone is helpful quickly, they're called Johnny on the spot. And frankly, I don't get that. I think it should be Rebecca on the spot. I'm going to start using that. You do too. Maybe it'll catch on. Rebecca on the spot. Verse 19 says, Rebecca gathered water not only for Eleazar, the servant, but also for the camels. That is so nice, right? We might kind of gloss over that. She's not simply putting out a large bowl of water for a cat or a dog. Consider this. Each camel drinks 30 to 40 gallons of water each. The text says he took 10 camels with him. So I'm not so good at math, but that's a whole lot of water. Rebecca is hauling a large jar, possibly going up and down hill or steps, bending, lifting, hauling, bending, lifting, hauling. This is a workout that would intimidate a ripped CrossFit devotee. This is serious labor. Rebecca knew what it would take when she offered water to Eleazar, because she presumably hauled water every day. Then she knew what it would take to take water to a group of camels. She counted the cost, and then she rolled up her sleeves. Do you remember this past March for Women's History Month when the paper towel company Brawny replaced its usual lumberjack-looking dude in plaid with a woman in plaid? The slogan was, "Strength has no gender. Be still, my beating heart." When we are thinking about how to respond to needs, whether with sanctuary and immigration or other types of needs, sometimes I and we feel that we aren't enough. Just as strength has no gender, hospitality and kindness has no age or ability or language or income or nationality. It is good and important to know one's limits, but maybe it's time to expand and equip ourselves individually and collectively. Sometimes I and we get stuck with thinking about or responding to these systemic injustices that are important, that we sometimes forget to show an immediate response with kindness. There's also this pesky and lingering ongoing issue of paternalism. When Eleazar arrives to the spring in search of this woman who will fulfill the sign, Rebecca, this would be ringing off bells in early listeners' ears. Rebecca is hardly the only woman in the Bible or even in ancient Near Eastern stories to be found near a well or a spring or another body of water. This ongoing motif of women in these places of water is an allusion to that woman's fertility. Rebecca's amazing service, hospitality, and rapid response should be celebrated and recognized for sure. I'm all about it. At the same time, we need to broaden out the lens. She is one piece of a much, much bigger puzzle. This abundance of water that she is drawing can be interpreted as a metaphor or allusion connected to fertility and therefore a visual for the flowing many generations she will set a chain reaction for after marrying Isaac and therefore fulfilling her part of the Abrahamic covenant. The vision is Abraham and Sarah will be the patriarch and matriarch of many nations with more descendants than stars in the sky. And Rebecca with Isaac pick up this mission and covenant, moving it forward. Verse 67 says, Isaac brought Rebecca into his mother Sarah's tent. Meaning Rebecca became the new matriarch with all the rights and responsibilities of that. Any good ally or advocate knows it's not about you. There is a much bigger picture. It is essential to focus on the one or the ones who are most impacted by the injustice or trauma. The story goes on beyond Rebecca, and the story goes on beyond you and me. Though Rebecca and you and I are both essential to moving the narrative forward. And the story goes on. Verse 61. Then Rebecca and her maids rose up, mounted the camels, shouted, "Hi-ho, silver," and rode off into the sunset. I added that last bit. Rebecca was at the right place at the right time, and she responded accordingly. During seminary, I had two wonderful friends who were a young couple and international students from China. They found themselves unexpectedly pregnant with a baby girl. They had recently, in the past few years, become Christians, and English was their second language, so they asked me to help them to select a Bible-based name familiar to English speakers for the baby. They had the Chinese name covered. I was no help there. I researched and suggested a number of names. Guess what name they picked? Rebecca. They connected with this particular part of Rebecca's story in the Bible, our passage this morning, because they had not planned to have this baby at this time, but they chose to have faith that she had, for some reason, come at the right time and in the right place. They also chose the name as a hoped prophecy for her life, a life of service and strength. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know all the types of needs and situations you find yourself in now or in your future. However, I do see inspiration for how to respond when, not if, need arises. Inspiration from Eleazar, the faithful servant, and Rebecca, the strong and giving matriarch. Take heart. Arise, beloved. Rejoice, daughters of Zion. The winter of isolation and hiding has passed. Spring blossoming has come, and the freedom of summer is here. Soon we harvest together to enjoy the fruits of our mutual service, and soon we feast as one family of kingdom. May the Spirit give us wisdom to know when to speak and when to be quiet, when to rise and when to sit, when to respond rapidly and when to slow down. Amen.